Should we start recording?
Yeah. Let's
okay.
Do it.
We're going to start recording now.
Let's do it. I'm going to go on a walk and hope that that helps me focus better.
I thought you were already on a walk.
I was just sitting.
Oh, okay.
In the park. Oh, got to sneeze. Got to sneeze. Do I sneeze in the mask or do I remove the mask?
I think you got to do it in the mask if you're wearing it.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're vaccinated and all, but... Nothing, it's not really much of a worse look than taking off a mask to blow a bunch of your face matter all over the place and then putting it back
on. Exactly. But it does feel really counterproductive or counterintuitive to sneeze into your own mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. Like your body doesn't want to do it. It's like, you know, astronauts have to learn to like use a diaper because you're not used to that. Your body's not going to let you do it.
Wait, are you recording right now?
Yeah, we're recording now.
Oh, okay, cool.
I mean, bring, bing, bing, bring, 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 bring. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Nobody just heard me talking about whether I should remove my mask or not. That was in jest.
Oh, yeah, of course not. Yeah.
Totally.
You would never do that, Linda. I mean, you're fully vaccinated. You're doing your part for the, public
thing.
Health of New York City.
And I have my mask on, even though as of last night, apparently, the world decided it's no longer mask time.
Mm. Yeah, things are changing.
Yeah.
We haven't talked in so long, Linda. Well, you and I have talked off mic, but we haven't recorded in so long.
I know. I would like that if you, or I, whatever, let our listeners know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm going to put the I'm just going to save a disclaimer right now because I don't want to have to record another thing before the beginning of this podcast episode
yes.
And insert it.
Disclaimer.
I'm just going to say disclaimer. We're going to talk about suicide on this episode. So, content warning, trigger warning for suicide. You want to hear about that? Turn the podcast off now. Go outside.
Turn
go for a
off.
Walk. Turn on another podcast. Turn on my new favorite podcast. Oh, it's not that new. Turn on one of my favorite podcasts, BigSoftTitty.png. That's a much better podcast if you're looking for some fun laughs.
And also hug a loved one.
Hug a loved one, Linda.
I wish I could hug you.
Yeah, I wish you could hug me, too. I also wish I could disembody myself and hug myself. That would be great. yeah, I mean, anybody that follows me on social media will know that a month ago, almost a month ago to the day, yesterday was the month mark, one of my dearest friends killed himself very suddenly without any warning or any of us being concerned about him, which was... awful. It's been a really awful month, Linda, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found out by texting Andy and saying, hey, you want to record an episode? And could almost immediately tell something was horribly wrong, just in the way that you said, not right now. And then he told me what happened, and my heart just fell for you so hard.
It's been a very weird time. For context, like this was my assigned roommate freshman year of college 14 years ago, and he and I were assigned to be roommates together. And Micah prides itself, I don't know if this is true or not, but Micah prides itself on like doing a lot of work to pair people their freshman year with roommates they think they're really gonna like. And I have, you know, I have a bunch of friends still that were my roommates, you know, assigned by college, including Day. And so we've been friends for the past 14 years, and then we lived together all through college, and then after graduation, we kind of, like, did our own thing for a little bit, but then he started working for Friends of the Web and has been working with us for the past 8-plus years. So, you know, even over the pandemic, I was seeing him every Monday to Friday on, like, a social video call every morning. And, people might know, I mean, if you might know of him, he's a type designer, so he's made some fonts you might have seen or used. And he was married to Victoria, who you also may know. She's got a bit more of a public persona than he does. And, just sent her out for groceries on a Tuesday morning and then hug himself in the basement.
Oh, Andy.
And it's like, so many emotions, right? Like,
yeah.
Obviously, my arc for this whole thing was that Victoria called me first. Like, before she called 911, before she called anybody, I just got a call from her, like, you know, screaming, and I couldn't understand what she was saying. It took me a while to figure out what she'd actually said. And then, you know, when I figured it out, I told Hillary to call 911, because I actually didn't know their address. I could drive to their house, but I didn't know what their address was. And then I head over there, And like I immediately went into just care for Victoria mode because as awful as this is for me and everybody else that knew Day, like to me it's unthinkably awful for her, right? Like this is a person that she spent like it was a pandemic, like she spent like literally every single day, the entire day with pretty much for the past year. They had just bought a house like 5 months ago. Beautiful house they had spent a long time searching for. It's all the right things they wanted for a house here in Baltimore, putting down roots. And so, like, her entire life is unimaginably upended. And so, like, she stayed with us for, like, 2.5 weeks because she wasn't going back in that house, obviously. And it was, at first, it was very much just, like, shock and help Victoria and do whatever we can for Victoria.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, it's so, one of my like overarching feelings about this whole thing is, I feel like when you're a kid, if you have a privileged upbringing like I did, you see in like movies and media, or you hear like stories of like drama and like really crazy shit happening in the world, and you're like, oh, that's not how life actually is, right? Like, nobody actually has their best friend kill themselves, and, like, you know, nobody, like, and it's, like, now it's, like, happened to me, right? Like, one of my feelings is that, right. As this past, like, it's been a rough, like, I don't know, let's say 4 years for me with my dad and now Day and stuff at work that you and I've talked about that I can't really talk about on air, and all those things are examples of stuff where it's, like, that doesn't really happen, right? Like, you know, most people, you know, you just think that that stuff's not going to happen to you, and then it does.
Right, exactly.
And, like, there's so many things that are so stereotypical about this, right? Like, Day... it's been depressed for as long as I've known him. I mean, always depressed. Maybe not, I mean, not clinically depressed. He was never actually diagnosed with any kind of depression, but, like, I always knew him to be a bit of a sad sack. I would, you know, refer to him as, like, my Eeyore friend, because he was always just kind of moping around. And the main way that his, like, depression manifested was just really low self-esteem. Never thought anything of himself at all. In ways that were almost, like, so extreme that it seemed comical. Like, you can't possibly think that, you know? Like he never, I mean, truly, to the day he died, I don't think, like, never really thought that, like, we were actually his friends or we actually liked him. Because his brain was just wired in such a way that everything you would do for him, with him, that was, like, kind and loving, he would have some explanation for, some excuse. He would write it off in some way. And then any little tiny thing that could be perceived as a slight was magnified 100 times over. And, you know, that was the truth, right? That was, like, the thing behind the curtain. Like, yeah, sure, we hang out, you know, every single morning for a half hour and play GeoGuessr, but actually they're not my friend because 2 months ago they did this thing and I wasn't invited. Or because, you know, I heard him say, overheard him talking to somebody else, and he said, like, yeah, you know, Day's a sad sack or whatever. Like, whatever thing that would be, like, a minor point of tension with you and a friend that you'd, like, talk about or not, just, you know, harbor a minor resentment, was evidence that he was not actually liked by anybody.
Right.
And so, like, you always hear this, I've always heard this, like, trope of, like, oh, when people kill themselves, like, everyone around them blames himself for the death. And here I am, and it's so fucking hard not to, Linda. It's so, so hard not to. It's like,
Because over the last month, like, I feel like I've witnessed you go back and forth on a few different things. So, like, the first thing is, like you said, just kind of, like, the shock, and, like, you were totally, it was almost like you put your own processing of it on hold to take care of her.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what my therapist says, too. I don't know what that means, though. Like, I don't know what putting my processing on hold is. It's like, it's not like I didn't think about it. It's not like I didn't, you know, sit alone and be sad and cry on my front porch about it or whatever. So, like, maybe, well, I guess, like, but also, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
But I think that there's, like, something tribal or something, like, primal happening there, right? Where, like, it's like if you're in a car accident and your adrenaline goes up and you, like, do everything you can to make sure everyone's safe, and then your body goes into, like, a physical reaction. Where,
yeah,
like,
then you realize your leg is broken in two places after you, you know, walk away from the burning car.
Exactly. So you've kind of gone through the mental, emotional version of that, I think.
Yeah, and it's like,
it's been very interesting to witness from my perspective, because Andy, like, you had to tell his parents, like, yeah. That is the thing that, like, I don't know how you, like, went to work this week, you know, like, that was only a month ago. Mm-hmm. I know that we're all wired so differently, but maybe your wiring is such that you can handle these types of,
I don't have a model for what not handling it looks like. Like,
right.
What else do I do? Like, you know, like,
right.
I am spending so much time thinking about him and thinking about our lives together. And it's like, that's what processing is, I imagine. But that's not going to be all the hours in the day. Like, I don't know what else to do, literally. I've cleaned the house a bunch. I've done a lot of gardening and, like, that kind of stuff, I guess. So yeah, I don't know what it looks like. That's the thing, is like, I don't have no meter for any of this, right? For like how I'm supposed
right.
to handle it, or like what this is supposed to look like. I have no clue, and I imagine there's probably not any right answer. But what I was saying is, like, the thing that's been really hard to come to peace with is that two things are true, right? Like, one, I am not at fault for him killing himself in any way, right? Like,
right.
I did nothing. And also, I'm not even sure, like, aside from, like, you know, prolonged extreme bullying or something, or, like, you know, maybe, like, a parent-child relationship where there's a lot of abuse, like, I'm not even sure what a person can do to make someone kill themselves, because it's such an internal thing, right? Like, I don't know how often you can ever blame anybody else. So that's
right.
True.
It's just a matter of, like, people, I think, wishing that they had done more to stop it from happening.
Right.
But then that assumes that this person, like, if they're left to their own devices, would do it, and that's problematic. And how much can you do? Like, if you can't have them on watch 24 hours a day.
Right. You know? And it's like, so that's true, right? Like, it's not my fault, and I can't be blamed for it. The other thing that is 100% true, and there's no doubt about this, is that one of the things he was most hurt by was feeling rejected by his close friends, like me included, and other people. Like, so, like, one of the things that made him most upset, that made him saddest, was, like, feeling rejected by us. And, like, again, I could run down all the fucking ways that we tried to include this guy, or did include this guy, or all the things we did that was evidence of us being good friends, but at the end of the day, it didn't matter, right? Like, all he felt was the rejection.
Right.
And so, I don't know. I'm also really struggling with, there's so much suicide prevention media that, like, encourages people to, like, reach out and stay in touch with their friends. And that whole, the way that's described, like, the idea that you should, like, reach out to people and, like, you know, care for your, like, that is described in such a way that that whole idea presumes that you can do something to stop it, right? Like,
right,
like,
exactly.
The idea that you have any of that, like, suicide prevention stuff implies that you could stop it. And, like, he never asked for help. He never called a hotline. He never saw a therapist. He never told anybody he was thinking of self-harm. He never told his wife. Never told me. He never told any of his other close friends he was thinking of it. No one knew. And so it's like,
it's like a sledge set.
I don't know. I did have the immediate thought, like, I never have a good answer for the dumb question of, like, what would you do with a time machine other than
right.
go back and get rich, you know, gambling yeah. or whatever. Like, I never have a good answer for that question. And I just really can't help but think, like, if we had known somehow, right? Like, if we had,
right.
if we had, like, left a tab open, you know, that, like, gave it away or something, and, like, we had found out and confronted him, like, what would it have changed anything or not?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The other thing is really, the other thing, like, it's just, like, basically, we were all every day in a fight for his life, and none of us knew. Right? Like,
yeah.
every little thing, every hangout, every phone call, every, like, you know, text message or whatever was, like, put on this scale of, like,
right.
how much do my friends love me? Is it enough to overcome this huge weight I feel of just being alive every day that, like, is just crushing me? And none yeah. of us knew that we were, like, you know, throwing pebbles at that scale. And if we had known, could we have ever overcome it? I don't know. You know, would we have bought him 4 more months until something else small went wrong and was the straw that broke the camel's back? I don't know. Did something I did 2 years ago, you know, buy him 2 more years because he was on the edge and I happened to text him or call him or do something with him and he, you know, felt a little bit of warmth for a moment where he was in a dark place. We'll never know, right? And it's just, it's maddening. It's fucking maddening.
I know.
It's also insane to think that, like, it's very disorienting to realize that someone you are so close to is going through such heavy shit that you have no idea about. It makes you look around at everybody in your life and be like, what are you going, like, and you know, it's a thing I've always known to be true, right? Like, I have felt that dumb quote where it's like, you know, be kind to people because everybody's, you know, fighting a fight you can't imagine. Like, that's a corny ass quote, but I've always felt that, right? Like, I feel like the root of my, like, empathy for people is just always assuming everybody's having the worst day of their life, right? I think we talked about this in the show before. We're like, I always try and assume that, especially in some situation where I'm, like, going to get frustrated or pissed at somebody. I'm always like, what if this is the worst day of their life? Like, what if that's the case? What if they're fighting cancer right now and I don't know, you know?
Right, exactly.
But to have that come true, to have that fucking, like, you know, mind game I play with myself, that, like, thought technology to, like, make myself be more empathetic, to have that be realized for one of the closest people in my life and have them have been fighting a fight for their life that no one knew about and, you know, a few too many things stacked up on the lose side and we lost him, it's, like, it's really disorienting.
Yeah. I mean, especially, I don't know, this is why I think, like, therapy is so important. And but I think that when you're in those desperate, in such a desperate place, it's easy to feel completely hopeless. And, like, why would I even entertain the thought of doing, like, that's not going to help me. Like, I'm dealing with something much bigger than that.
You know, I don't have, one thing I regret not talking to him about at some point was just therapy, because I know he didn't have, like, the kind of, like, stigma that some people have about therapy where it's like, oh, you only go if you're broken or messed up. Like, he did not have that kind of, like, toxic masculine view of therapy where it's like, oh, no, I only go to that if I'm, like, a weak of character or whatever. But he also never went, apparently. And I knew he was sad for so long. And I told him, you know, before how much going to my therapist helped me. And I wish I'd at least had that conversation with him. I wonder what he thought. I wonder if he thought he was beyond help. If he just thought, this is how my brain works and there's, like, this is how the world is. And he's lived it for so long, he thought there was no hope it could possibly change. Or I wonder if he thought he didn't deserve it. Like, it was a waste of the resources of the therapist to, like, spend time working on him when they could be helping somebody else. Like, I don't know what it was, but the fact that he never tried that is kind of maddening. One of the things that's most frustrating to me is, like, you know, as somebody that's on antidepressants and who has helped them, been helped by them, and who my wife's also been helped by them, you know, a lot of people I love have been helped by antidepressants. It's like, this could have just been fixed by one fucking pill. Like, for all you know, dude, you had, like, some dissociative, you know, bipolar, whatever, and, like, one pill would have just, like, changed your entire perception of the world, and you could have felt the love that people had for you for the first time in your fucking life.
Yeah.
You don't get to know now. You never got to feel it. And it could have just been one stupid, like, fucking brain chemical that was, like, out of whack.
Yeah. No. Ugh. I'm so sorry. It sucks so much. Did you find, I know you were looking for some sort of a, like, grief counselor or, like, something to do, like, what? Because collectively, because, like, it's not just you that's affected by this. It's, like, your whole team.
No, I'm laughing because I've been trying to find some kind of group grief counseling, which I want to offer to everybody in our office.
Yeah.
Both to, like, make it very easy for everybody that might want to talk somebody to talk somebody. And also to, like, make it clear that as an institution, you know, the company values this and values the, like, mental health and well-being of everybody. And it's been hard to get in touch with anybody. One of the only people that responded to was Linda. I was laughing because, you know, a lot of my coworkers are like me in a very big picture way. Like, we're all very practical. We all kind of, like, intellectualize the world. Maybe we're not all, like, super in touch with our emotions because we're, like, focused on this, like, very very practical level of the world around us. And one of the people that responded to, like, my reaching out about group counseling was like, absolutely, I have this 3-hour program, I'll come into your office, and the first hour I give you a presentation about my daughter who killed herself, and then the
second
hour The second hour, we will collage together and make collages about our feelings. And then the third hour, we will present our collages to the group. And I was like,
this is
not going to work at all.
Yeah.
I was like, this would be actively bad for everybody, I think. I think this would make only make people clam up. So, I mean, I no shade to anybody who would get benefit from that. But, like, the last thing I want is somebody telling me the story of somebody. Like, I don't know.
Like, yeah, open up a fucking Figma Jamboard after hearing somebody else's tragedy.
I do not want to make art about this. And also, like, from a counselor-patient perspective, you know, I don't want to hear your story. I think there's going to be a lot of value, and there's been a lot of value already. I've talked with other people. Other people have reached out that have had close friends or family members kill themselves, and I've had some good conversations with those people. And so I think on a level playing field, like, that's a great thing to share your experience with somebody else and hear about their experience and learn from each other. But I do not want that from a fucking counselor where it's like, I want to talk about our thing, not your, I don't know.
Yeah,
It's been hard. I was really energized about trying to find somebody because I thought it'd be such a good thing for the office. And then getting that response, I was like, oh, no. This is like, first of all, this is going to be really hard to find somebody that's a good fit. And then I also, you won't always know. Like, that person's whole shtick gave them away very quickly is not a good fit for us, for our sensibilities. But somebody else might be like, sure, I'll do my thing. And then when they get to the office, out come the scissors and glue sticks. And they're like, you know, trying to do something. And it's like, oh, no. Like, I'm now like feeling deflated about it because I'm worried about doing it the right way, and it just seems like so much work to find somebody that's the right fit. Still trying, though, but...
Yeah, but that means the fact that you can't find something just shows a bigger issue, right? That, like...
Oh, so many systemic issues have been further revealed by this thing.
Exactly. Like, there's toxic positivity, which makes people not want to talk about their feelings, so there's that whole angle, and, like, people not knowing how or if or when to reach out when they're feeling this way. But then also, like, when this does happen, which it does, people go through this in life where they have to deal with the loss of someone, and you can't even find, like, the kind of help that you need to get through it.
There's been a lot of that. There's been a lot of calling a billion places for any kind of support and getting voicemails and people that have to ruin their schedule and people that don't take insurance and, you know, all kinds of stuff. It's like a whole fucking morass.
Right, but if you wanted to schedule, like, a gender reveal party, you could probably find, like, 900 people who would plan an amazing party.
And burn down a whole 100 acres of woods just for you.
Exactly.
One of the systemic things I'm really mad about is, so, you know, obviously we called 911 and they sent the first responders, which are the police in this case. They didn't send an ambulance. I don't know why or if the ambulance was going to come but then didn't because he was already long gone. I don't know what the situation was, but the first responders were the police. And Linda, fuck the police. Fuck it.
Yeah.
It's so fucking stupid that in a moment where the most horrible, awful thing has ever happened to somebody just happened, you get a bunch of goddamn meat-headed assholes that show up with guns. Like, Linda, I was sitting on the front lawn on the sidewalk with Victoria, just like sitting there dumbstruck, you know, like embracing, and no less than 3 separate police officers walked by and said, hey, how you doing?
What?
Don't ask us how we're doing. It's a pretty fucking bad day. Maybe send somebody that's had any kind of fucking sensitivity training at all to do any of this.
Oh my god.
And then they send the detectives, because it's a crime scene, and the detectives have to figure out if there's any foul play involved, of course, before anything else happens. And so the detectives want to take Victoria back into the house, which we didn't let them do, I guess we can not go back in the house if you really want to. And then they demanded to be alone with her, which she didn't want, but they demanded it for crime scene reasons. And then they disclosed gruesome details to her that she was not aware of, because they were asking her if she knew about these things. And, like, further, you know, further traumatized her. Right.
Jeez.
And it's like... And like, then the police just, like, you know, called the, like, coroner, and the coroner came and took the body, and then they just, there we are, left on the sidewalk with literally no support. And it's, like, it's really not that fucking hard to employ social workers or anybody with any fucking experience dealing with this kind of stuff, because you don't need a bunch of assholes with guns to show up to fucking suicide. Like, you don't need that. It's not necessary.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And, like,
yeah, that's pretty enraging.
And, like, I'm not actually mad at the individual police officers I mean, I am kind of, but I'm really not logically, because I'm mad at the system that makes this their job. Like they go to work and they just do whatever the hell, you know, they get told to do. And most of what they're told to do, they're not qualified for, have no training for. And they just show up with guns and basically like ask, has anyone seen a brown person around lately?
Right.
And it's just so fucking annoying. And I have no problem going on a fucking rant about this, because Day also hated the cops. We shared our hatred of the cops. He fucking hated those assholes.
Yeah, I was watching some, like, crime drama. This is not real life, but it was, like, but it was a UK crime drama, and it was, like, somebody had reported a rape, and so this whole, like, crime unit showed up, but part of that was, like, a social worker to deal with, like, the trauma aspect of it. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a thing that we probably don't have in the United States.
Right. Or it would have been,
I don't even have to look it up.
Social worker there to call Day's parents for me. That would have been fucking great. But I sure as hell wasn't going to let a fucking police officer do it. Some, like, idiot. Because I do not know how to have that conversation. I don't know how to do it the right way. Right? Somebody out there has been trained in that.
Exactly. And that person, like, had to be you in that moment, because you were, like, the best option.
Yeah.
And
so I'm pissed. I'm really pissed about that. I'm really mad about it.
You're rightfully pissed.
I'm also, I'm also mad at toxic masculinity, which, you know, it taught all of us to not share our emotions with each other, conditioned us to not tell our friends we love them because you look like a pussy or whatever. I'm mad about that. I'm mad about everything.
Yeah. And you will be for a long time.
Yeah.
You have to carry that with you now. I'm so sorry.
Thank you for saying, Linda.
So
you were very
helpful,
happened. I gotta say. You did a great job supporting me.
Thank you.
So thank you for that.
It's hard to know what to do, but just being there.
You know, honestly, you were one of the people that was just like, I don't know what to say, so I'm not going to say anything. And I was like, fuck, that's a breath of fresh air. Most of the grieving process was a bunch of people saying things at me that I wish they weren't saying. And so,
what were some of the worst things? What were the kinds of things that you did not want to hear in that moment so that we can all know for the future?
Honestly, like, so most of it came when I was with Victoria. It was like the first couple days, right? And a lot of it was like people asking questions like why, and it's like, bitch, nobody knows.
Oh my god,
we don't know why. That's not how this works.
That's none of your business.
So like that was one of them. I don't know. I just it becomes this like the whole process becomes this. We joked that we were just repeating the same thing over and over again to like 20 different people because.
Yeah.
A, there was nothing else going on. Like, for the first week, we just basically sat around our house and were sad, you know? Which actually was kind of nice, right? Like, I understand all of the, like, religious traditions where, you know, like, sitting Shiva and stuff, where you just, like, sit around and be sad. Like, cool. That comports with my, like, emotional experience of the world. I'm down to do that. But then it's like, you have to give the news to a million different people, and you just have to keep saying the same thing over and over again, which is frustrating and annoying. And then I guess anybody that tried to like say something to make me feel better, none of it worked. sorry if you're listening right now and you tried to do that, but there's nothing you can do to make me feel better, because that's not the situation we're in. It's not a situation to be solved. It's just a situation to be survived and tolerated for a while.
Exactly. Just has to suck. I think that, did you say that, like, there's no unfucking this situation? It's just,
I don't know. I've said a lot of stuff in the last month. I can't remember any of it. It's been a blur.
So, since then, I think that you were able to actually see some friends.
Yeah, I mean,
the other night.
The other thing is,
was that cathartic?
Well, yeah, so, I mean, the other thing is, he was, the next day, he was supposed to get his second vaccination. He was, like, all lined up for it. And I had gotten my second vaccination, like, right after it happened as well. But, like, when this happened, like, our quarantine basically ended, right? Like, Victoria moved into our house. Victoria's mother flew up from Houston and moved into our house. Victoria had friends coming in that weekend that moved into our house. Like, we were just like, yeah, some things take priority over potentially getting COVID. And then we were in that space of, like, prioritizing that over, you know, a quarantine or whatever. And then I actually got my second vaccine and like the 2 weeks lapsed or whatever. And so now we're both fully vaccinated and can actually see people. And so like, this was just the conclusion to our quarantine basically. And yeah, it's been really good to see friends again. And I've been seeing a lot of friends, which has been great. And I'm very lucky to have a lot of support. So,
yeah,
no one has to worry about me. I'm doing fine. I have a lot of support. Yeah. Good.
I mean, I heard a real shift in your tone or Reddit in your text tone when, just over the last couple of weeks. And it seems like you're, yeah, you just got a lot of people who love you a whole lot.
I do. I'm very lucky to have that. And I'm also, you know, very lucky to know that I have that because, you know, Day had that but never did that. So I'm lucky to also be conscious of that, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very lucky. He was kind of obsessed with Moby Dick. One of his many... he was into a lot of stuff. Here's the other thing about Day. You know, we had a coworker of ours that worked with us for many years, like 5-ish years. It was our first like full-time hire, and worked alongside Day for a long time. And they were very close. And when he got a new job and moved away, Day stayed in touch with him more than the rest of us did. And so I called him to let him know what happened. And one of the things he said, I really appreciate this guy for being very, he's also of the like practical brain, but he's very good at articulating his feelings regardless. And one of the things he said was nicely condensed one of the ways I felt, which was that, you know, Day was a sad guy. We all knew it. I mean, you could tell. You know, he just was a sad dude. Anyone that spent more than 20 minutes with him knew he had, like, you know, some demons haunting him. But also, he was one of the most joyful people I have ever known. Like, he had so much joy in his life. All of my memories of him are, like, doing... We had a shared love for absurd comedy and just, like, dumb, stupid stuff. We'd, like, dumb little bits that made no sense to anybody else, and I couldn't even bother to explain. One of my fondest memories of him is once it was, like, junior year of college. We had this apartment we were renting where, like, the kitchen was an open kitchen looked out over the dining room. So it was, like, one big room, basically, on this like, a first floor of this apartment. And I was sitting at a table working or something, and Day was cooking in the kitchen. There was no one else home. And I just, like, absentmindedly, like, kind of looked over and made eye contact with him. We made awkward eye contact for, like, a few seconds. And Day's response was to make a weird face. And then he just started juggling the eggs he was holding. Like, as if... He was like, I'm uncomfortable you're watching me, so, like, I'll do a little performance for you. He was juggling these eggs, like, making a weird face. And then he dropped one, and it broke. And so he just threw all the other eggs all over the kitchen. Like, he just committed to the absurd bit of breaking all the eggs. And there was just eggs all over the cabinets and everything.
That's
like
so
a perfect
funny.
Example of the dumb shit. Like, he would always commit to the dumb little bits. And, like, we just laughed for, you know, 10 minutes after he did that.
That's amazing.
So, like, he had all of this joy in his life, too. And something that this coworker said was, like, you know, he was surprised he killed himself. Because, like, he was, like, he didn't... In his head, like, the kinds of people that killed themselves were, like, haunted by very different demons than Day was. You know, like, it's not like Day didn't have joy. He did have really bright moments of joy. I know he had that with Victoria. I mean, they were so in love. I mean, she's like the only person that ever managed to convince him that she loved him. She did. I mean, and they were so good together. And it's like insane to me that he left her. Like, I can believe he left the rest of us, you know, for whatever reason. But, you know, it's... For it to be so bad that he left her is, like, unthinkable to me. Like, it tells me I had no idea what he was going through, if it was even an option on the table to leave Victoria, because they were so in love.
Exactly.
I don't know. He was obsessed with Moby Dick. So he would read it. He read it every year for a long time. I don't know if it's continued up into his death, but I know, like, when we were in college, he read the book every year as, like, you know, a way to mark the year. I forget what time of year he'd read it, but he'd just, like, pick it up every year and read it. And so I'm reading it now because it strikes me that, you know, Moby Dick is a story about, like, depressed ship hands that, you know, joins with this obsessive captain that's obsessed with this one thing, like killing this one whale, and then chases this one thing for his entire life, and then they all die in the end, right? Like, the whole point is that it's a completely hopeless, like, the whole point is that the journey was poisoned from the start, right? Like, no one was ever going to survive. And I can't help but be struck by the poetic, relevance of that, that he was obsessed with this book where the protagonists couldn't defeat their demons and got killed by them after protracted, you know, many, many chapters about, you know, ship's knots and chowder and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's exactly. my current processing is reading some Moby Dick every day. Thinking about him, I feel very grateful that I have nothing but happy memories, really, and that I can enjoy the happy memories.
Yeah.
But
that's good. And I like that you have Moby Dick together. Well, like, maybe...
Well, the perfect is, like, he would have loved it if I read it with him while he was alive. He would have loved to talk to somebody about it, but, you know, I never did. I was like, Moby Dick. It seems like an old, shitty book.
Well, but I think that must be just...
Reading it now.
That must just be what's so hard about this, is, like, all the woulda, couldas, and, like, I think that's the thing that we're always doing, right? Like, with our families and friends and everyone. It's like, oh, next week, like, I'll check in with them, or I'll check in with them tomorrow, or maybe we'll go on that trip that we talked about. And so then, like, when this happens, it's just all taken away from you. You can't.
Yeah.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
I
tweeted one of the hardest things is, like, you know, it's a very different loss than my dad was.
Yeah.
And one of the most... I mean, well, for one, I liked Jay, so that's one thing that's different about it. But the other thing is, like, you know, my dad was an old man, right? Like, if he didn't die 2 years ago, he would have died in 5 years. Like, he was never going to live another 40 years or whatever. But I really, really, truly thought that, like, Dave and I were going to be friends forever, and we have the rest of our lives together to do dumb shit and make stupid jokes.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's very, you know, it sucks to have that taken from you.
Yeah. So sorry, Andy. It really sucks.
Thank you for saying it, Linda. I appreciate
it. It really sucks a lot. It's the biggest, hardest thing.
I'm very grateful to all my friends, you included.
What were you saying before? You're kind of like, well, this is the hardest thing that she'll have ever had to go through in her life.
Oh yeah, I was trying to, you know, I want to be clear that most of the time I was not trying to console Victoria, right? Because I don't think that's appropriate. I was just sitting there and being there with her and, you know, kind of ruminating in the sadness. But I did say a couple times, like, you know, now it's been 2 weeks or whatever. I think that's probably the worst 2 weeks of your entire life. Like, there you go.
Yeah.
You're done. You got through them. The worst 2 weeks you're ever going to have. You know,
and now you
crossed.
Know.
I mean, fuck, I hope it's not two more worse weeks coming for her ever.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's something. I hope to me, there's something a little freeing about the thought of, like, I hope this is one of the hardest things I ever have to go through. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Like a pretty morbid thought.
I guess what that means to me is, like, for me, so often the anticipation of something is so much worse than it actually happening. And
right.
This is not something I anticipated. But in the case of, like, my dad, I did see it coming for years. And I do feel like the most emotional hardship I suffered through that was not the day he died or the day after he died or the week he died. It was the 2.5 years of watching himself just fall to pieces and, like, wither in front of me, basically. Like, that was the most painful part, just the anticipation of it.
Yeah,
and now
exactly.
It's like... I don't know, like, do you not look at your dog all the time and think, like, fuck, you're going to die. I'm going to have to, like, there's going to be a day where I'm going to have to, like, go to bed and know it's your last night, and the next day I'm going to have to drive you to the vet, and that'll be your last day.
Like, I can't think about it.
I can't think about it either. It gets me so upset.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's something to the fact of, like, I never would have seen this coming. I didn't think I'd have a friend that would kill themselves. I didn't have all that horrible anticipation. But having survived it feels like something to me.
Yeah, exactly. It's just not, there's no good way to wrap it up in a little bow, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, who's calling me?
Anyway, what's up with you, Linda?
So I'm
sorry to
really
monopolize
good.
The show.
Don't be sorry. This is what we needed to talk about. Because...
I honestly, you know, I wish we'd recorded sooner just because I will want to come back and listen to this in the future. And I would have even liked to have had another record of how I was feeling 2 weeks ago or whatever, but I just couldn't fit it in. My life was too...
Yeah, I mean, it's like I told you, this is the absolute lowest priority.
Right, and I know that, and I feel that too. I mean, it's not literally the lowest priority, but yeah, it's not, like, I prioritize talking to you, you know, privately much more than I prioritize recording this show, but I'm really glad we got to record today. I do wish we could have done it a little bit sooner, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. I'm not bothered in the least. Just glad you're okay. I am shocked and amazed at how okay you are, and I'm grateful.
I feel a little guilty about that too, if we're honest.
Yeah, but don't, you know?
I remember when, like, my dad died, I felt okay pretty quickly afterwards, and my therapist was like, kind of in disbelief and also being like, yeah, well, just you wait. Like, I know that I've done the grieving thing with a lot of people, and, like, you know, 3 months tends to be when the second shoe drops. And I remember being, like, anticipating the 3 month mark for weeks, because I was like, I'm waiting to, like, have a second round of feeling awful about this, and I just never did.
Right.
And I was like, maybe I'm not what my therapist thinks I am, but I don't know. I mean, I'm glad I seem okay to you. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. You seem all right. And, like, if that's an option, I'd rather take that over, you know, being inconsolable for months.
Yeah.
So, there's an old-timey trolley just, like, stalled in the middle of the intersection.
Stalled?
Yeah.
Maybe it's loading up.
Something poetic about hipster revivalism. Getting stalled out in the middle of the street.
But it's a bunch of little kids in bow ties on board. Hmm. Like, they're probably, like, 7.
Some sort of, like, bridal party or something with children?
I don't know. I don't know.
A 7-year-old getting married?
A little girl's got a flower crown. I bet it's a wedding.
Oh, here's the other thing I want to say about this, and then I'll be done, and you can go on and have a normal Friday. Day was extremely cynical, which I can sympathize with. I'm also very cynical. But we always joke that he didn't like anything. Like, he just had a good reason to talk about it. He saw all the shittiness of the world very clearly and had a very hard time delighting in any of the delightful things that were mired by shittiness. And so, like, first of all, like, everything in my life touched him, right? Like, the couple days after, I was, like, having trouble sleeping, of course, and I was trying to listen to podcasts to fall asleep, and it was like, I listened to 50 podcasts. Every single podcast I listened to was either one that I shared with him and he also liked, that I shared with him and he said he didn't like and was bad, that he shared with me and that's how I discovered it. Like, I've talked to him about every single podcast I listened to basically over the years.
Right.
And the one thing that keeps coming up is, like, he would have hated all of this. he hated to be the center of attention. He would have hated... Yeah. Like, everybody thinking about him and he would hate the fact that we're recording this podcast episode right now and, you know, talking about all my fond memories. He would have hated this so fucking much. And it's like, it's this, like, little curse he, like, put on all of us where there's no way to, like, continue. And it's, at this point, like, I've come to peace with it. It's just kind of funny to me. But there's literally no way to do any of this in a way that he wouldn't have hated. Like,
right.
Just,
so anything that you do to, like, remember him, like, would not feel right to anyone who knew him.
It wouldn't feel right to him, certainly. Like, he would never want any kind of memorial. He would never want to be remembered. He would never want anything. And so,
is there some of that? Like, he wouldn't have wanted this, so we shouldn't do it?
There's definitely some of that, I think, that some people feel. Or even, like, it just feels inappropriate. Even if it's like, who cares what he would want? He's dead. It's like, it still feels like, you know, a weird way to remember somebody if it's in a way they wouldn't have wanted to be remembered. But he wouldn't have wanted to be remembered at all, is the thing. Like, he wouldn't have wanted anything. I will not act on this for a long time, maybe years, but I cannot shake the feeling that I will end up getting a tattoo about him.
Moby Dick.
And he would hate that too. Oh God, he would hate that so much.
I think of the meaning.
I think about tattoos a lot. We've talked about tattoos a lot because I feel drawn to them, but I've never felt like there was a thing I would get tattooed on me. And in a weird way, the fact that he hurt me so goddamn bad by killing himself, it's like, I want that scraped into my skin. I want to be scarred by that physically for the rest of my life. Like,
and you should go on one of those cheesy, like, tattoo shows on TLC record the whole story.
That would be his favorite thing. He would have loved that a lot, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I can't take that feeling.
Maybe that's the way that you can fully bring it together. Just contact TLC.
I love you, Linda. I love you so damn much.
I love you so damn much.
I'm very grateful for your friendship. Talking to you is great.
I'm sorry this happened to you.
And I do want to talk about your life on the next episode of Earth to Linda. What has Linda been doing for the last month and a half? She started a new job.
Know.
What's going on in Linda's life? We'll find out.
Zoom calls, Zoom calls, Zoom calls. How many Zooms? All right, bud.
Anyway, fuck the police. Goodbye.
Fuck the police. Have a great weekend.
Love you.
Love you. Bye.